It is quite common when visiting a Baptist church on the occasion of an infant presentation rite, like tonight, to hear a sermon explaining why we're not baptising the child. And of course, the irony of this is that the preacher usually ends up having a lot more to say about what's not being done than what is being done, which is probably an indication that we often have very little idea what we're doing at all. I'm not actually going to say much about either tonight, but I wanted to raise it because I think it illustrates a pretty important issue from tonight's Bible readings. And it's an issue which, while not specifically about children or the rites associated with children, is quite important to our general understanding of what it means to connect people to the church, whether they be infants or otherwise. In tonight's gospel reading, we heard Jesus speak of himself, or in the more traditional version, we would have heard Jesus speak of himself as the good shepherd. Tonight's version said the first-rate farmer. But Jesus describes himself as the good shepherd who lays down his life for the sheep. It is actually the passage that's set for today, regardless of what else we were doing, but it's quite a popular passage for when there are rites around children, because sometimes those pictures of Jesus nursing a lamb in his arms are almost interchangeable with the ones where he's nursing a child in his arms, and they look very similar. The most common and most tempting thing for a preacher to do with this passage about the good shepherd is to begin contrasting the good shepherd with the bad shepherds. And the oldest form of this approach said that before Jesus, the people of God had been under the care of the Jewish religious leaders, but that those leaders had failed to properly care for God's flock, and therefore God had sent the good shepherd to replace them. And so now the chosen people, the true flock of God's sheep, were not the Jews but the Christians, which is a pretty crude kind of approach. And it's given birth to all sorts of anti-Semitic atrocities down the years, and it's easy to see how much it was driven by a desire to locate ourselves in the right camp, which is a lot like those hostile sermons about infant baptism versus infant presentation. A somewhat improved approach focused not on the religious leaders before the time of Jesus, but on those within the church since, to shine a searching light on the all too often corrupt and power-hungry antics of church leaders and church institutions. This is certainly something that needs to be done. Things like the current Royal Commissions into the failures of church institutions and their leaders to protect the children in their care must be taken seriously, and we need to learn from our failures and ensure that they're not repeated. But if we're going to manage to do that, we need to own that they are our failures. And far too much of the preaching about bad shepherds is actually another form of us and them thinking, which delights in condemning others while gloating over our own status as the sheep of the good shepherd, who are therefore beloved by God and so, so much better than those people who are different from us, which of course means wrong. If we were to take such an approach to our understanding of the Good Shepherd, then our celebration with little Tara tonight, regardless of whether we baptised her or enrolled her as a junior catechumen, would be all about kind of celebrating our proud belief that the group that she was joining, the us, was the group that was more right and more beloved by God and more truly the one flock of the Good Shepherd. But if we did that, we would be doing violence to the words of God, the words of Jesus, and we would be inflicting more grievous wounds on his body, the church. And yet, we can't escape the questions that have so often led in such directions. Of course we want to know what it means to be saved, to be forgiven, to be beloved by God. And of course, parents want to know how their newborn children are to be gathered into the life and love of God. both infant baptism and infant presentation rites began as the church's attempt to answer exactly those kind of questions. The questions are not wrong, but the aftermath all too often degenerates into fractious disputes over who came up with the best answer, and such disputes are a blight on both answers. Within this same passage, Jesus clearly foresees and challenges our tendencies to try and draw lines around our own groups and define ourselves as the one true chosen flock. He says quite explicitly, "I have other sheep who do not belong to this flock, and I must bring them also, and they will listen to my voice." Do you hear that? They do not belong to this fold, but they're still my sheep. Whichever fold you're in, whichever flock you're in, it is not the only one whose sheep belong to Jesus. And we can see this writ large in the life and ministry of Jesus all the way through. Nearly every conflict that he found himself in, including the ones that led to his death, were about his refusal to accept that any one group had a monopoly on who was saved and who was beloved by God. Over and over and over, he was criticized and condemned for welcoming the wrong people, eating with the wrong people, forgiving the wrong people, and celebrating God's love with the wrong people. Everyone wanted the blessings of God reserved for their special group. And Jesus insisted on spreading and sharing out the blessings of God as though they were for absolutely everyone, insiders and outsiders alike. But if the church is not the special group of Jesus' insiders, what is it? What are we doing here? Why are we deciding that this child should, at least until she's old enough to know better, be brought within its shared life? If it does not guarantee that we're right where others are wrong, or we're saved where others are damned, what is it about? Well, Jesus stated on a number of occasions, and our reading from the first letter to John restated it tonight, was that you can summarize God's expectations of us in one word: love. Love one another as Jesus taught us and as Jesus loved us. And as Jesus put it on another occasion, people will know that you are his followers not by which group you belong to, nor by which set of rituals you practice, but by the ways that you love one another. Now, some people will quite rightly object that that sounds a little bit too simple. Love one another can sound a bit in-house. What about love others and love your enemies? Well, yeah, these are crucially important and clearly part of what Jesus taught. But Jesus started with love one another, and surely he knew what he was saying. You see, learning to truly love others, and especially learning to truly love our enemies, has to start somewhere. Sometimes we kid ourselves that we can love our enemies while we're actually keeping our distance from them and loving in theory only. It is always harder to love the people who are close enough to be irritating. We gather here not because we are the right group or the most wonderfully loving and Christ-like people around, but because we need to commit ourselves to sharing our lives with a specific group of people who frequently get on our nerves. And we hang in there with them, for better or for worse, while we learn what it means to really love one another as the Good Shepherd loves us. So when in a few minutes we sign little Tara up as part of this congregation, we're not doing so because we think that doing that puts her into the loving hands of God. We're doing it because we recognise that she is already securely held in the loving hands of God. And because this is a place And these are the people with whom we are learning together what it means to surrender ourselves to that love and be transformed more and more fully in the shape of that love. And we truly hope that she will come with us on that journey. The Good Shepherd is known by his willingness to lay down his life for the sheep. And if we are to truly follow him, we too will be known by our willingness to give our lives for others, not by our concern to secure our own rightness or chosenness in opposition to others. The Good Shepherd lays down his life for you, for me, for Tara. And it appears that he couldn't care less which flock you come from. He will recognise you as his own regardless and call you to follow him in company with others deeper and deeper into the fullness of life and love.